I talk a big game, but I'm terrified right now.
Siri, is it time to start recording Bad Voltage?
Yes, Jeremy.
And on that fine note, welcome to season 1, episode 12 of Bad Voltage.
That was weird.
That was the creepiest intro we could possibly have.
Your Siri voice is very disconcerting.
Really disconcerting. That's going to haunt my dreams tonight.
Anyways, welcome to season 1, episode 12 of Bad Voltage, where we once again do not have the entire team.
Yeah, Langridge joined us for a little bit earlier on, and then it turns out his internet connection continues to be useless, even though he's moved houses.
But we still do have Jono, myself, and Brian. So what are we going to talk about this episode, guys?
Well, today we are going to be talking about Mozilla's appointment of their new CEO, Brendan Eich, I believe is how it's pronounced, and how the controversy around that is going down.
Indeed, we're also going to move on and have a lovely discussion with Zohar Babin from Kaltura. We're going to be talking about open source video and all that kind of good stuff.
And we'll also explore whether AI will ever really be our friends or significant others as it was in the movie Her, and if we'll ever reach the singularity.
And then Stuart, in a pre-recorded special appearance, is going to review a speaker for his shower. And then we are going to spend at least 5 minutes imagining what that looks like.
And then if you haven't made a sick in your mouth already, we're then going to have a conversation about stuff that's been going on in the community, on the forum, and various other places, and why my predictions continue to become real. So, Jeremy, Siri Jeremy, what should we do?
And now, Bad Voltage. So, kind of inspired by the release of the movie Her recently, which I'll add that, once again, none of us have seen. I have a question for you guys, though, based on the premise of that movie, is do you think that computers or artificial intelligence in general will ever really be our friends, or even, as the movie portends, significant others? And I guess a follow-on question that would be, will we ever reach, you know, the singularity, if you will? Just for a quick kind of synopsis for those who haven't seen the film along with us, is it's set in the future, I think roughly around 2025 or something like that, and it centers on a man who develops a relationship with an intelligent computer operating system, I believe they call it, with a female voice and personality. I think in the movie...
So someone who falls in love with Samantha. Puppy Linux, right?
So it's basically yes. He falls in love with Siri and has a very serious actual relationship with her, even though she has no physical form. And at the end, she... I think actually goes back and hangs out with other operating system as opposed to humans. So what do you guys think? Do you think that people will ever date artificial intelligence or even just be friends with artificial intelligence?
Wow. So much meat in that bone.
Do you guys, just as a tangent, do you guys remember back in like the late 80s and early 90s, the flood of like random pseudo artificial intelligent chat programs that came out? Like there was a whole bunch of them for DOS. I think one of them was like a psychologist and one was named Lisa, where you could just chat with her. Some of those were amazing. And
I have expect you're asking this because you wrote one.
No. I wish
loneliness
I was that
tycoon.
Well, here's my thinking. If we can have artificial intelligence chat programs in the 80s, and we're here in 2014, I think flash forward a couple of years, I think it can be sufficiently advanced to hold a decent conversation. Hell, I know friends of mine, I'm not going to name names, who have significant others that are the most boring people in the world to talk to. I think emulating them would be a piece of cake for just average run-of-the-mill hardware.
On a Raspberry Pi or something. I think it's going to happen at some point because, you know, like people talk about the I think it's called the Uncanny Valley, which is, you know, like when you have, this commonly applies to robotics where someone builds a robot and there's bits of that robot, they try to make him look like a human. There's bits of it that still look fake. Right. And typically it's like the eyes and it's the skin and those kinds of things. They call it I think it's called the Uncanny Valley. And when you can cross that, where you forget that that is a robot,
yeah.
Then that's when we get to that point. I think that that's going to happen with virtual reality at some point. Like we already saw we've heard cases of people having fairly long lasting relationships in places like Second Life, where they never actually meet the other person. And then for all intents and purposes, they're falling in love with an avatar. If there's a person on the other side.
Yeah, there's a human on the other side being.
Yeah, that's right.
But I think it wouldn't surprise me if at some point, like software's got to get advanced enough where you'll be able to emulate what it's like to be human. And I think that combined with something like VR, what we'll end up seeing is, I think we will at some point definitely get to that. Whether it's going to happen in 2025 or whatever, I don't know.
See, I almost think the opposite opinion of you is I think that as artificial intelligence improves, and I think it's clear that it will improve and get, I don't know if we'll reach the singularity, but there's got to be a point where just from an intelligence perspective, artificial intelligence probably will have progressed to the point that it's great or greater than human intelligence, right? But I think as that happens, something like this actually becomes less likely because love and intimacy, right, they're really complex and really nuanced, but they're really illogical. And I think that the illogical aspect of them sometimes would be something that a computer will never really be able to emulate because I think that those two emotions are just so raw. They're what make us humans. I think every other aspect of a human you probably will be able to replicate, but it's things like that that I don't think... Like there's a part of the movie, I guess, just looking at the plot summary on Wikipedia, where he asks her if she's kind of talking to any other operating systems or people, and she said, yes, I'm talking with 8,316 others, 641 of whom I've already fallen in love with. And from a computer perspective, that makes her love greater because she understands different dimensions of love. But from a human perspective, from a very base human perspective, that will never fly, right? So I think as the intelligence grows, the odds of this happening go down, not up, to me.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me if a lot of it would be, and this is going to sound quite dickish on my part, but
we expect nothing less from you.
Right. I think that the first people who will experience in this will have fairly simple needs in life, right? So I don't think that the three of us, right, knowing you two guys, I don't think we would ever fall in love with a computer. Maybe Brian. But that's because I think we have a fairly complex set of emotional and physical needs as people. But I can imagine like a really lonely guy out there who just wants a bit of companionship falling in love with a computer.
And there are a lot of very lonely, very introverted people, men and females, out there. Right. So
yeah, difficult to exactly. disagree with
that. Did you guys ever see the episode of Futurama where Philip J. Fry fell in love with a robot clone of Lucy Liu? Lucy Liu at the end, she's dying. She got like impaled with something or something, and she's looking at Fry and saying, "Oh, I love you, Philip J. Fry." And to me, that moment really sums this whole thing up nicely. You can code in and create an environment and a simulation that would feel loving and wonderful. You could even create pheromone injectors, basically have the equivalent of a smell-o-vision, except that excreted loving pheromones for us to get attracted to. So you could hit all sorts of different senses, but there's always going to come that moment where you just can't replicate humanity unless you are simulating all of humanity. So I suppose if you have like a computer simulation that's simulating an entire person, every single cell, maybe. But until that point, I mean, it's just, there's always going to come a point in the relationship. You've been married for 10 years to this loving artificial intelligence. And then all of a sudden she says something that was real computery and it creeps you the hell out. And then you really got to get out of that house fast. I just don't think we're ever going to come to get past that point.
No, I agree. Well, so kind of change in... Oh, go ahead, John.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, kind of changing direction a little bit. The one thing that John had mentioned when we were discussing this segment was Skynet, which is kind of a different take on how artificial intelligence could potentially evolve. That one seems a little bit more likely to me and a little bit more scary, obviously.
And to be fair, results in some very, very attractive robots from the shows I've seen. So I don't know. Maybe I'm completely wrong on this, and maybe this is going to work out great.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, I think, the whole thing, because there's no, like, we're definitely going to have, I think we're definitely going to have, you know, self-programming computers. We're going to have self-replicating computers, particularly with the growth in 3D printing, all that kind of stuff. That's going to happen, right? I mean, there's no doubt about it. But what's interesting to me is this whole discussion is really about the emotional connection between an organic creature and an artificial creature, like a human being in a computer. And to me, the thing... we already see cases today where people, like, where lonely people fall in love with, like, I saw a show years back about these, you know, real dolls, these ultra realistic sex dolls, and there's like five people on this show, and each of these people felt like they had a personal connection to these sex dolls, and it's easy to look at that and mock it, but these people, like, quite lonely people, and they filled in all the gaps. Worst possible way of describing that. they basically, you know, where we would think, you know, oh, you know, this doll is, like, not moving and all the rest of it. They psychologically filled in those gaps to the sense that they were people, and they were people who loved them. And that's where I think the lonely people will start out. But what's interesting to me is whether that could apply to the general populace. And I don't think it will, because there'll always be things that computers can't do, like, you know, going out for a, you know, going out and having a romantic dinner with your boyfriend, girlfriend, wife, husband is something you can't really do with a computer, right? You can sit at home with a, you know, Project Morpheus PlayStation headset on,
right? Like Krieger experience. From Archer, you can project her somewhere, but that doesn't make it real.
Right, so yeah, I don't know.
Or
so
like Brian said, they'll do something very computery, which will freak you out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, seg faulting, for example.
Right.
So for those of you listening to this that maybe have seen the movie, we want you to head over to community.badvoltage.org and let us know what you think, because it seems like, uncharacteristically, all three of us do agree on this. So if you have a dissenting opinion and maybe think that it is possible, or you are currently dating your Nexus 5, why don't you let us know?
Man, do you guys remember the show Small Wonder?
Never heard of it.
No. Look that one up. It's about an android robot girl that this family raises as their own little girl. Fantastic.
Really?
Yeah.
You watched some weird,
extremely creepy
weird shit.
This is a 1980s sitcom, man. This is good stuff.
It's like Family Ties with an android robot.
It kind of is. And she wears, like, this creepy dress, and it looks like she should almost be, like, in a horror movie really far down a hallway. It's fantastic.
There are people in the world who don't even like music that much. It might be hard to believe, but it's true. Similarly, there are people who can only do one thing at once. You have to ask yourself, what's wrong with these people? This brings me on to the subject of the Aqua Audio speaker system. What this is it's a little Bluetooth speaker. There are zillions of these around, of course. But what makes the Aqua Audio a little bit special is that it's got a sucker on the back and it's waterproof. So what you do with it is you put it in the shower. And then while you're there lathering up bits of yourself, you can do it to the sound of Hell's Bells by AC/DC. This is a marvellous concept. And the Aqua Audio should be a great exhibition of that concept. Sadly, what it actually is a physical realisation of the phrase, you get what you pay for. Consider this technology. It's able to receive music by invisible manipulation of the radio spectrum and convert that into sound that you can hear. And while it's doing that, it's also able to be controlled with buttons, pair with arbitrary devices, be waterproof all at once. It cost me 15 quid. That's about 20 euros, or it's about two plates of the moons over my hammy from Denny's if you're an American. You may not be surprised to hear that it doesn't work all that well. To be honest, I'm not really looking for amazing sound fidelity here, right? While I'm there washing my hair, attempting to sing like Brian Johnson, it doesn't really worry me. The music isn't in 5.1 Dolby surround sound. It's not transmitted over those gold cables that idiots pay a grand for. But it only took me a couple of showers to realise the warbly sound of music underwater is not being caused by me actually being underwater. It's caused by the speakers being about as useful as a fart in a spacesuit. About half the time, they actually work okay. The other half of the time, the sound from them is rather like what you get if you made Shirley Bassey sing Goldfinger while you were simultaneously feeding her into a wood chipper. In other words, it's not great. Some of this can probably be blamed on Bluetooth, which is basically evil witchcraft, and it never, ever, ever, ever works right. More of it can be blamed on my Nexus 4, which won't pair at all when it's running Ubuntu, and it keeps pretending that I switched Bluetooth off when it's running Android. But it's at least partially the speaker's fault, because it's essentially made for one and threepence, and then flogged to cheapskates on Amazon. Part of the reason that Bluetooth has never really taken off is that it's just so annoying. Press a button to put the thing in pair mode, then tell your phone to detect it, and half the time it doesn't work. Or it decides that what you actually wanted was to pair with the woman next door's shower speaker instead. And the Echo Audio turns this up to 11, which is ironic in an almost prophetic way because it's actually a speaker which doesn't go to 11 at all. Also, it charges over USB, but it's got a custom socket, not a micro USB socket, which I think means that when it actually runs out of power, I have to throw it away, because I have no idea where its cable is. It is a nice blue colour, though. So, the bad voltage verdict, having a speaker in your shower is a great idea. But not this speaker.
So I guess this is interesting because the fat man isn't actually on the show to respond to our questions about his review.
I think this makes it all the better.
It does. So his shitty Bluetooth speaker. It's a good point. Yes. So I'll be honest with you. I don't want to talk too much about him taking a shower because that whole review conjured up all kinds of awkward.
Positions. I was going to say, I'm going to share a disconcerting part of this review with
the
listeners here. When he sent the email to tell us what he was reviewing, he mentioned himself in the shower minutes before I was prepared to go to dinner. So it's I haven't eaten since. So I give you that mental image, listener.
And I've seen it. I've seen it because, it was at his place last weekend.
You've seen Heck in the shower or the speaker?
I've seen the shower. Oh. He'd be a bit crammed in there, to be honest with you. It's not a big shower, right? So I imagine him shoved in that shower, puffing and
you
puffing.
Were just in his flat. Does he not own a speaker loud enough that ever. He can hear it? That seems bizarre to me. I said you were just in his flat, weren't you? Does he not own a speaker loud enough that he can hear it in the shower, or does he just like extra knobs to fill around with when he's in there?
Oh, no, I get it. Putting a speaker in the shower makes certain sense. I mean, you stick a radio outside the shower, it's not right there. You can't jam as well. You need your speakers right there.
I just have this vision of him in the shower, with shampoo in his hair, in his eyes.
And listening to One Direction.
He's huffing and puffing, is trying to get his Bluetooth speaker pairing up with his bloody phone.
No,
and his little sausage fingers trying to like press the button.
Wow. It's just brutal, man. Yes, brutal. You are a very good friend, especially taking the piss on him when he's not even here.
So, okay. So here's the really important question in all this. So Ak is naked in the shower, dripping wet, there's steam everywhere. What is he listening to? I'm assuming it's either One Direction or TLC, because I'm thinking he's a Don't Go Chasing Waterfalls guy. But what do you guys think? What's he listening to? I mean, he's singing along to it.
I don't know. I think he's more of a Taylor Swift kind of guy.
You think he's into the Taylor?
I think he's pretty Swifty.
Well, she's a very talented young woman, so that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm sure that he likes a bit of Taylor Swift in the shower. I know exactly what he listens to in the shower. He listens to AC/DC. Like, Ak listens to AC/DC everywhere.
Well, that one wasn't fair. He said that in the review. I think he meant to say Katy Perry and spelled it wrong.
Him, Him going on about doing a Brian Johnson impression in the shower. I hate to say, but I can mentally picture that in my brain. So, yeah. So it sounds like he didn't particularly like the his crappy little. It's just classic of him, though. Like, he's so cheap, right? He's going to buy a. Most people are going to have a nice, a speaker in the shower that you'd lay a bit of cash down and have a nice pleasurable entertainment experience. And he's like £15.
Right. I paid 99p for this. God. Why doesn't it work?
He bought it from TJ Maxx or something.
Dude, TJ Maxx is pimp.
It is. So yeah, I had two cold showers in his flat. Like, he hasn't figured out the plumbing yet. So
you sure you weren't just pressing the volume up instead of trying to make it hotter? Two things I very much agree with: custom chargers that are not just regular mini or micro USB are an abomination that should just die a fiery, fiery death. I don't know why any company would make one of those. I guess companies that sell things for £15 are in there, or Apple. The other thing is, why is the workflow with Bluetooth so ridiculous?
I was going to say the same thing. He's right about that. Like, the fact that pairing these devices is so bloody complicated. I mean,
right?
You think to yourself, I'd like to take the pictures on my phone and put them onto my computer. It's a fairly simple thing, and you have to type in PIN numbers and all. I mean, it's hard on Linux, right? Of course it is. But it's as equally hard on Mac and Windows as well, I think. What's that face, Lunduk, by the way?
I'm just making a face at you, Mr. Ubuntu.
And this is why we don't do the show on video.
That specific face was the reason why we will this will never be a video show.
Then you're welcome.
anything else? Any other thoughts about axe showering or tiny Bluetooth speaker?
All I know is this. I'm sold and I'm getting one now.
Of all people that have a Bluetooth shower speaker, I would have thought it was you, Jono.
Right?
Yeah.
No, I do like to listen to music in the shower, but...
Oh, so do I. But like I have a speaker loud enough that I can play it from a different room and it will make it all the way to the bathroom.
That's what I do as well.
Some years back in 2008, I believe, Proposition 8 was happening down in California. Now, for those of you who don't remember what Proposition 8 was, there was basically a movement to strike down a Supreme Court ruling in the state of California that had declared that same-sex marriage was totally fine and hunky-dory. Proposition 8's movement was to say that no, we as the people of California do not want gay marriage within the state. It was very controversial. There was lots and lots of fighting. People were slapping each other around. It was fantastic.
Now, it was pretty ugly,
right around that time, a gentleman by the name of Brendan Eich contributed $1,000 of his own money to Proposition 8 because that was a cause he felt was important. Now, you may know the name because he is the newly appointed CEO of the Mozilla Foundation. Now, some people are a little upset about this, and I think, I'd like to get into that a little bit, but people are upset that a person who is adamantly opposing gay marriage and has even contributed funds to the cause of limiting gay marriage within specific states of America is running any company, but not just any company, a very open sourcey company, a very freedom loving company. And that has got some people's feathers all ruffled up. Now, what I would like to know is not just what you guys think of this, but what you guys think of the reaction from the community. Many people are out and out boycotting Firefox, Firefox OS, Thunderbird, all the various Mozilla projects because of this move. What do you guys make of any of this?
Today, some of the employees are even asking them to resign.
Yeah. There's been a bunch of them. Like, I think
actual employees.
Yeah, the founder of Open Badges and some other people.
There was at least five or six of them last time. It happened right before we started recording, but...
I think this is a complete and total witch hunt is what's happening right now. And I've always been of the view that... people not just applying this to Brendan Eich, but... and just to be very clear before anyone starts shouting at me... I completely oppose his politics. Like, I believe that, I believe in equality. I believe that gay people should be able to get married, live and let live.
Sure.
But he should be evaluated on his ability to lead Mozilla And his personal politics and personal opinions and perspectives, I think, should live outside of that. Now, if he had spent Mozilla dollars, which are like Disney dollars, and he'd used that money towards, you know, funding these kinds of campaigns, then that'd be different, because I think that would be reckless and irresponsible. But the fact that people are asking him for, to me, this is more about a witch hunt from people who disagree with him ethically, as opposed to the fact that he's done any kind of, as opposed to any kind of, you know, bad conduct on his side. What do you think, Jeremy?
Well, first I would say I agree with you that I disagree with his politics as well. But I think as a private individual, right, you should always be entitled to your own views outside of the corporation or company that you work for. And that would include, I guess, supporting those views with your own money. And additionally, I would really be opposed to any company of any size, be it large or small, nonprofit or not, taking a political or social or religious or environmental, whatever you have it, position, and then forcing that position on all employees, whether that position is ethically or morally correct or not. I think where it becomes complicated here is that he's not an employee. He's a CEO and really the public face in a lot of ways of Mozilla. And where it becomes a little more complicated there is because he's the public face that has a lot of other ramifications. And not only that, he's in a position to make final decisions about personnel, about compensation, about a lot of items that his opinion, and while it seems like he really does separate them very well from everything I've read, and that's one thing you said, it's a witch hunt. I would encourage people to take this as a single data point, which is what it is, really. The fact that he made that donation, I don't know that that has to typify his entire beliefs or what he believes.
No.
I don't even think he's released. You know, everything I've said from him, everything I've seen from him, sorry, has said, if you want to talk about this personally, and I know you, I'm happy to have the conversation, but I'm not going to have it over Twitter with random people on the internet.
I think that makes sense.
The other ramification that would concern me more if I worked for Mozilla is, regardless of what people think, you now have people saying, I will not contribute to Mozilla because of this. And if enough people say that, the question to me then becomes, was it a bad decision? Not even based on whether he was correct or incorrect, but the impact that it's going to have on Mozilla, the distraction it's going to have, that becomes the real issue, I think.
And, well, I think it goes even further than that. I think you're absolutely right. That's a potential issue, and it kind of calls into question, in my opinion, the logic behind the Mozilla board's decision to actually appoint him. He might be a really great guy. He might be a really qualified dude to run that company. But because of this, and because it was an out in the public known thing a couple of years ago, that calls into question what they were really thinking of.
That shouldn't have any impact. If the guy is a good CEO, that's all that matters.
I completely disagree for this reason. I think that both of you guys are right. What you personally think and what you personally believe and your own political viewpoints should not really enter into business. And I believe that's Brendan Eich's position as well. He keeps his politics separate. The problem here is it's not just purely a political issue. We start to get into the realm of civil rights. So the issue here is, if I work at Mozilla, a hypothetical, and I am a gay man who would like to marry or has already married another gay man, well, I assume he's gay, otherwise I just really surprised him, but I married another man, that would start to make me very uncomfortable knowing that the CEO of my corporation, the head, the guy that not only sets the public face, but sets the internal direction and really guides the human relations department, he is not only against me having the same civil rights as the other employees, but he actually donates money to actively see that I cannot have those rights.
But what you're basically saying there then is that no one in a position of leadership or public representation of an organization can have an opinion about civil rights.
I think what's upset a lot of people is not the opinion. It's not, as Brian said, the fact that he went above that opinion and donated money to change a law.
So what you're saying is that nobody in a public position
impinges on civil rights.
Nobody could ever contribute to a civil rights campaign, because it goes both ways. Because I don't know this, but I'm willing to bet that if he had come out publicly saying, I'm supportive of gay marriage. And I believe that, you know, I believe that equality should, you know, should be celebrated in all of its beautiful forms.
Other people would be upset
all
as
of these people would be shouting from the rooftops the fact that he said this. Yeah. So it's a very much of a one-way street.
It's not an issue of whether or not he can do that. And it's not an issue of whether or not the Mozilla Foundation can support it or not. It's that every action that someone takes has consequences, both good and bad. And in this particular instance, the bad consequence, it probably is going to outweigh the good in terms of being the CEO of Mozilla. Now, I have no qualms with him supporting things in his personal life. I really don't. I disagree with his politics, but just from a purely practical standpoint, if I am at a company where people running the company are actively restricting my own civil rights, I'm going to be concerned about that. It's honestly, it's not that much different than, say, having someone who's pointing to the CEO who is opposed to black people being allowed to vote or Jews being allowed to get married. I mean, if any of those things came up, that would concern me and that would make me uncomfortable working for that corporation. And that
becomes
an issue. But the
difference is, though, I think the difference is, though, here is that that where it gets murky here is that, you know, the three of us basically have pretty much the same viewpoints on this, right?
I think so.
Equality. So to us, like, it's a no-brainer, right? Gay people should be allowed to get married, blah, 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 blah.
Sure.
But where it gets, I think, murky is that from the eyes of people who disagree with that, for whatever, maybe religious or other reasons, right? What about those people who work in at Mozilla who... Or working for an organization that has a CEO has a different perspective. Yeah. Like, to me, this is the reason why it should be separated, is because it makes no, like, just because that guy is running the Mozilla Foundation, what counts is not his personal viewpoints. What counts is the company culture or the foundational culture.
Agreed.
That's there. Now, if the organization said, look, we don't allow gay people to come and work here, or we don't like the idea of gay people getting married, then that is really screwed up. And in my mind, that person should be ejected.
Yes.
But you know,
that's not happening here. Agreed.
And what I find so ironic about this is it seems like we all love openness, so long as it's my flavor of openness, right? And one of the things about free speech is that sometimes people are going to say things you don't particularly like, but you should still respect free speech. Because it's not like the guy's demonstrated any kind of hatred.
No, he hasn't. He hasn't come out.
He's just like, I'm kind of not digging the gay... Right.
No, I agree with you. I think from my standpoint, it's more of an interesting thing, one that we should be concerned about for the employees that are concerned about it. And if individuals who are involved with Mozilla projects or utilize Mozilla projects are concerned, we open a dialogue with Mozilla. We talk to them about it. What I think is a little strange is the idea of creating a complete boycott of all Mozilla projects because that's of what ridiculous. One individual thinks. I think that's going a little bit far. And the reason I think that's going a little bit far is because there are people within the free software world, people we respect, that have far more intense, at least in my viewpoint, stances on things. I mean, Richard Stallman has come out and said some pretty crazy things over the years, and we're not boycotting everything that has the GPL stamp on it. We're not boycotting Emacs. Right. We're not boycotting GCC. We're still using those projects despite Richard's involvement. And so I feel like we can't simply boycott Mozilla here. Otherwise, that's pretty doggone hypocritical of us.
But that's the reason why I think it turns into a witch hunt. Like, I'll give you an example. Like, personally, I think it's ridiculous that, as you guys already know now, I think it's ridiculous the fact that this guy's getting grief for this, even though I completely, like, I condemn his politics, not just
I would almost say the fact that people at Mozilla, employees at Mozilla, feel confident enough in their ability to speak up probably points to the fact that they don't think there'll be retribution, which means that it might not impact his decision making, which I would see the fact that they spoke up as a plus in his defense, actually, ironically.
Yeah. But the thing that gets me is that there'll be some people who will be of the viewpoint that if you disagree with, like, if you agree with the fact that the guy should be kicked out or whatever, you should boycott things, then it's an easier road. If you disagree with that perspective, I guarantee there'll be some people listening to this and they'll think, yeah, Jono agrees with him. He hates gay people. Right? And that, to me, is where in these kinds of situations, not just in this case, in other situations, it's so ridiculous. Like, you know, we can disagree on things and not necessarily, you know, it doesn't have to turn into a witch hunt every time.
It doesn't have to turn into a witch hunt, but, you know, just the same. I mean, if you put yourself in a hypothetical situation, you flash back, you know, 50 to 100 years, and you start working at a company where, you know, the civil rights movement for, say, women getting the vote is becoming a big issue. Now, if you feel that that's an important issue and you have a CEO who is actively campaigning and contributing money to make sure that women aren't allowed to vote, women at that company are going to feel pretty doggone uncomfortable. And and looking at it in hindsight, do we want people like, or slavery? Do we want black people to be slaves? If you have a CEO who firmly believes black people should be slaves, and it was during a time when there was some contention about it, well, sure, it's understandable at the moment that there's contention because there's a lot of people. But you flash forward 20, 30 years, you're on the wrong side of history. And then you guys know what I'm saying here. Like, I look forward, you know, 20, 30 years with the way laws are currently going. The individuals who are saying that certain individuals do not deserve certain civil rights are going to be on the wrong side of history. Absolutely. I would hate to have my company or my organization like Mozilla entrenched on the wrong side of history when it comes to civil rights.
Especially
I would be
when the
really
company's
concerned
mission is
with
to
them.
Promote openness and things of that nature.
It's concerning.
One thing where I definitely agree with you there, Brian, is that even though I don't think he should be, his performance should be judged on his personal politics. I can completely understand how some people would not want to go and work there.
Right.
If, you know, if I was a gay man and I'm choosing a place to go and work, I can understand how I will be put off. But I do think a lot of it is, and it's difficult to say this, like I've always been of the viewpoint of unless you experience a particular form of discrimination, you really have no idea what it feels like.
Right.
And I don't know what it feels like to be discriminated on my sexuality. I've just never experienced that. So to me, it seems the exact opposite,
by the way. I get praised.
I get discriminated against by my wife, but that's different, right? But it seems, you know, it's like, to me, it seems like the guy threw like $1,000 in that direction, $1,000 somewhere else. It doesn't seem like he's making it a big deal.
It's true.
But then again, like, I think if I'm in that position as a gay man, then maybe I'd see things differently, you know?
Well, I think it puts the board in a tough position as well, right? Because Mozilla is a very unique company, or very, it's not even really a company, right? Their corporate structure is pretty much unlike almost any corporate structure of any company that I'm familiar with. And they have a very unique culture as well. And the amount that he understands, not only that structure and culture, but the amount that he's contributed to JavaScript and to, I mean, he was contributing to Mozilla before Mozilla was Mozilla, right? So to have a guy with that deep technical chops and that deep understanding of the organization, it'd be really, really difficult to find someone with that kind of relevant experience to replace him with. So to take him out based on this, you know, it's clear that we live in a world of limited resources, right? And focus because of that is very important. So while this is clearly taking away some focus, even with that lack of focus, it's going to be difficult to replace him. So the board's in a really tough position, I think.
Agreed.
So just before we wrap it up, how do you guys think this is going to end? Like, what do you think this is going to look like in a month?
I think this is going to end badly.
I can't see a way that it ends well, regardless of what the outcome is.
I don't know how it's going to go. It's going to go bad.
I think this is going to be a storm in a teacup. I think it's going to be over in a couple of weeks. I think the people who are saying that they want to boycott, they're going to boycott it, it will end in a couple of weeks. And the people who are requesting him to step down, I don't think he will step down, and they won't leave. I hate to say it, but this happens all the time in the open source world.
You know, that is a good point, John. I mean, it's not like he's suggesting that they rewrite the display server or something crazy like that.
Baka-ow! So today on Bad Voltage, delighted to bring on a friend of mine, Zohar Babin, who works at Kultura. How are you doing, Zohar?
I'm very good. How are you, Jonah?
Very, very good. We are privileged to be blessed with your presence. So first of all, some people who are listening to the show will have no idea what Kultura is. Give us a quick summary of what you guys do.
Absolutely. And thank you for inviting me. Kultura is the open source video platform. We like to see, and no pun intended to the Ubuntu guys here, but we like to see Kultura as the open source video operating system, if you will. So essentially the core behind your video applications.
And what does that look like in practical terms? I mean, somebody thinks, okay, I want some open source video goodness injected into my existence. What does Kultura look like?
That's a great question. So actually, when people usually ask that question, they usually ask themselves, I need an internal YouTube, for example, to my company or in my university. Or they say to themselves, I need a way to store my family's videos. Or I need a way to do a live broadcast, like this show, which I'm not sure why you're not doing in video.
Anyone who's seen us will know why we're not doing this in video.
We're all way too ugly.
It's quite simple.
Printer video.
We have the definition of faces for radio.
Yeah, we do our faces for radio. So, yeah. Thank your lucky stars that this is an audio show. But sorry, you were saying.
So they ask themselves that question, and then they go online and they search for... video applications or YouTube in a box or all sorts of things like that. One of the first things I'll come across with, luckily, thanks to brilliant SEO, is Kaltura. and Kaltura essentially is a pack of a lot of different components that you need to handle video. That includes video encoders like FFmpeg, Mencoder, and so on. That includes a quite robust PHP stack that manages those encoders, allows you to upload, allows you to create all sorts of workflows against different remote FTP storages, integrations and simplification of the integrations with CDNs like Akamai or Amazon CloudFront.
Right.
And that it also includes the front-end side, which is, applications that look like YouTube or the video player, which has, a world of complexities on its own, like how do I play my video across mobile devices, desktop computers, Linux, Windows, Macs, as well as television and maybe even broadcast. So there's a world of problems that you need to deal with when it comes to how do I deliver my video across different platforms, and Kaltura is essentially that platform to solve those needs.
Interesting. And so you said it's open source, right? I think a lot of us think of video as this remarkably proprietary technology, like when we think of codecs and things such as that. There are some open video codecs out there, but is the open source bit everything, or is it just the software that allows you to spin up streams and people connect to them and deliver the player and stuff like that? Or is it open source? Does it include open codecs and all that kind of stuff as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So as I said, we see Kaltura as kind of an operating system, right? The core of Kaltura is responsible for basically making all the various components in the online video world work together seamlessly and stable. So that includes, in order to handle the encoding side of things, which are, handling the codecs, the wrappers, all that stuff, you need something like FFmpeg to transcode those videos and make sure they're playable across those devices. In some of the platforms, that will be open source codecs like WebM or, all sorts of, like Oak Theora, for example. So FFmpeg will deal with that, but Kaltura will be kind of the manager on top of FFmpeg telling it, hey, I just got this video, I need to generate it in those formats, and then we'll launch FFmpeg with the right parameters. And if it fails, it knows how to do failover and all that stuff. We try to build Kaltura with as much open source as we can in the stack. So essentially the core encapsulates also FFmpeg and Mencoder, as I said. We also, in the open source package, provide Red5 as the streaming server. In order to do image handling, we use a lot of Image Magic. So there's a lot of different components involved in the system.
Which part of the system that you have guys that you guys
my
have built
own
together,
YouTube
is?
Is Kaltura about me building my own YouTube, or do you guys do that? Can I just upload videos and have you host them individually? Are you running your own Vimeo here?
Yeah, that's the idea, right? So you want to create your own video, for example, Vimeo. You want to create your own YouTube. You will be responsible for creating the front end, right? The application itself. And then Kaltura will provide you with all the backend systems that you need in order to handle, you know, how do I deal with users from all over the world using all sorts of different devices, uploading their videos to my server? How do I deal with all those formats? How do I make sure that those formats are aligned and the best quality and all that? But also go into things like, you know, distribute them on CDNs, managing security, things like that. We do provide quite a lot of on the client side as well. Kaltura took an open API approach as well. In addition to the fact that we're open source, everything is basically built as an API kind of driven system, where essentially the server, all the features in the server are wrapped in an API layer. And then every application that we ever build, including the players or widgets for uploading or recording or things like that, they all use the same APIs. So that simplifies significantly how to create APIs. We also provide client libraries that are automatically generated from that API to support native programming languages. So if you want to build a mobile app that does, for example, a video library in iOS or in Android, you can download the iOS or Android client libraries and then build your mobile app using native iOS or Android programming languages, Java in Android case, or Objective-C iOS.
And this is a very big general question, but we see the dominance of YouTube, and YouTube has been amazing for just opening up all kinds of, you know, content providers, people who are making, short videos. They've got these shows on YouTube. There's people who are recording gaming and all kinds of stuff on there. Do you see that in the future of Kaltura? I mean, do you see that you guys are there to kind of challenge that? Or do you just want to focus on the tooling? Or do you want to set up a big kind of video sharing kind of service?
It's an interesting question. We do see that question come up quite a lot recently. Amongst different scenarios, we might get to that. We're not set to become a content platform, though. We are very much a video, a technology vendor. This is where we see Kaltura. But through our work with, you know, different customers of Kaltura, different world users of Kaltura, especially in the education field, for example, we're seeing universities that want to share content between themselves, but also maintain attribution and copyrights and things like that. Kaltura actually has one of our commercial applications that built on top of Kaltura, uses the APIs, called Kaltura Media Space, which is, kind of a YouTube in a box UI as well. And a lot of the universities came to us and said, what if we could share content between other universities around us? And so Media Space allows you to kind of open your repository and allow students from other universities to search across your archive as well. And then when they come across a video that is from your archive, it basically takes you to the other university's media space, for example. So this is just a small taste of how we can contribute to this world. But we definitely do see ourselves more on the technology side rather than on the content side.
All right. So all of that sounds pretty fantastic and all that. But what I want to know from you is, which specific part of the solution you have built do you consider to be the crappiest?
Great question.
Awesome question. Which part do I consider to be the crappiest?
Yeah. What sucks? Yeah. What are you genuinely embarrassed about?
What you guys do, yeah.
I don't know. We do everything so well. No.
It is so tough. Every nerd who works on a project has one specific part of the project that they know is just driving them crazy. What is it for you?
I want to tell you a story, actually. We've been, Kaltura has been around since 2006. And ever since then, we've been so damn focused on making sure the core works so well. And we also have our commercial options. So operating Kaltura SaaS, which is Kaltura.com, and supporting our customers, that we've pretty much almost even neglected over the years the fact that installing Kaltura is extremely complicated. There are all sorts of components involved, and that made a lot of users frustrated, honestly, including myself. So this is, if I had to kind of choose over the years the crappiest part, this was it. And then I'm happy, actually, because...
Because it's amazing now?
Beginning of this year, in January, we actually started investing in that area. And one of the girls that work with me, I'm so proud of saying girl. She's an awesome developer.
Right.
You don't see a lot of them now.
Yeah.
Hopefully, we'll start seeing more and more. And so Jess created this awesome...
They have too many ovaries.
So Jess created this awesome packages project, which is if you go to GitHub, it will github.com/Kaltura. This is our main repository, and under that, just search for platform install packages. This has completely changed the world of our open source community. Because now people can easily install Kaltura, even across clusters using Chef scripts and stuff like that. So I'm extremely proud on that project. Now, if you ask me what is the future and where do we see things, other crappy things get better? a lot on documentation, actually. We've had tons of it thrown around. And we do have a great knowledge base, but there's just a lot of confusion around. And so one of the next projects that I'll focus on will be on organizing all the documentation in the world of Kaltura, including, other contributors like blogs and stuff like that. And trying to create a more streamlined approach to documentation and essentially help people understand what Kaltura is and how you install and how you get started with it.
Brilliant. Well, Zohab, thank you so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate you taking the time, and all the best for the future with Kaltura and fixing all the things that suck.
Hey guys, can I ask you guys a question?
Yeah.
Possibly.
Is there just a bunch of random stuff we could talk about that's happening and stuff like that?
A community recap,
let's
perhaps?
Let's do this.
That's a possibility.
Yeah, maybe some kind
something
of recap.
Like that. Yeah, like a recappy type thing. Yeah. You want to do one of those real quick?
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's
rock and roll.
Let's make that magic happen.
Well, it just so
what's
happens.
Going on, Brian? Hey,
I was going to tell you if you would stop interrupting me, Mr. Jono.
That's okay. Tell us. Yeah.
I was just going to tell you real quick. On Saturday, March 29th, at 1900 o'clock military UTC time, which I have no idea what that is in real human time, but we're having a gaming Saturday. So if you go over to community.badvoltage.org, there's a thread that talks about it. You can get the information. We're going to get our multiplayer game on. It's going to be rad.
Yeah, it's... I think UTC, I think right now 1700 is, I think that's midday.
That's night.
Pacific, and then 3 p.m. The other side, Eastern.
I have no idea. I'm going to have to Google
that one. Thanks
for the
help on that one, Jono.
Yeah. But it is 1900 UTC, whatever the heck that means.
And kind of while on the topic of community.badvoltage.org, it does appear that there's a little bit of a bug, and some of the threads will just load the header, but it won't load any of the thread content. So we are looking into that. I know the 2014 predictions thread is one of the threads that's happening too, because I've tried to post in it earlier today and wasn't able to.
Yeah.
But I think there's probably a couple other threads as well. But we are looking into it, and we hope to have it fixed as soon as possible.
Speaking of predictions, I would like to remind both of you, and if Langridge the first was here, I would like to rub this in his face as well, that I made a prediction that VR, virtual reality, that is going to be a big deal in 2014, and that Sony would release a headset and Microsoft would at least announce the plan to release some kind of VR headset. And lo and behold, Sony have indeed announced at the Games Developers Conference in San Francisco, Project Morpheus, which is their VR headset. So... smugness personified.
Yeah, but you know what? In all likelihood, that's just going to get bought by Twitter pretty soon, so it's no big deal.
Yeah, kudos to you, sir, but I will remind you that even a blind squirrel gets a nut every once in a while.
Oh, poetry is beautiful.
All right, let's see. There's this gentleman named Tyson Brown who's creating some artwork based on the Bad Voltage podcast. What's the details on that, Jono? I don't even know the details on this.
Yeah, Ak mentioned this. I hadn't seen it. That apparently Tyson Brown is a student, works in some student-y type place, like a university or a college.
He's taking a design, digital media design class at Swinburne University in Melbourne. And evidently they asked him to take a podcast that he took an interest in, and he has poor taste in podcasts and picked Bad Voltage.
Yeah, seriously. He took an interest in this one?
What they
not
I guess
like
wanted
Twitter
to do is kind
or anything
of,
like that. This one,
it's the mind reels.
I'm guessing that he's maybe having a relationship with a computer at this point in his life, as opposed to a real person, based upon his choices.
Basically, they want him to redevelop the podcast identity, kind of based on his interpretation of it. So he's going to redo all the artwork and some kind of brand identity or whatever they do it.
That's pretty rad.
But yeah, that's very
cool.
We are honored
and
humbled, and you are more than welcome to do so. We do appreciate it.
Well, maybe we shouldn't be honored. Maybe he thinks we're rubbish, and therefore he wants to redesign it all.
That is
maybe
a
that's part of the reason.
He wouldn't be wrong.
And just as a final thing, I haven't seen the details of this. Ak put this in the notes before his useless internet connection stopped him from joining the show. But apparently we had an email from Chris Hatton about Brian mocking Brian for not knowing what Penelope Pitstop is.
You know, so, do you mocking have any... me doesn't help because I still don't know what Penelope Pitstop is.
I don't really get what it is as well. So.
Stuart seemed to think it was remarkably crazy that I didn't know. And I don't know. I don't know.
He's a ginger. So that's it, really. If you want to join the community, go to community.badvoltage.org, where you can join the fun. Also, be sure to check out badvoltage.org/IRC if you want to go and have a chat with the folks in the chat channel. And be sure to send us email as well to show@badvoltage.org. So if you think about it, this whole show has had a very closely connected set of things. We've talked about people with loud and obnoxious opinions, people who are lonely, people who are lonely who may have a pre-existing relationship with a computer.
Oh, yeah, that's very good.
People indulge in maybe online video a little bit too much. And Ak taking a shower. So we've basically spent the entire episode talking about Ak. It seems fairly reasonable. So
nice. This is the Ak show.
This is all about Ak. This is what happens, by the way, folks, when you don't join a recording. Brian and Ak have both suffered significantly when they've missed a show. Jeremy and I always
have to miss
a show. Yeah. So
you know.
Well, I will say for a show
fancy?
With the. For a show focused on open source and technology, we sure have been picking some interesting and derisive topics. Especially with that Mozilla one, it's really tough to articulate a sane opinion in 2.5 minutes. So when you're listening to this, keep that in mind. I think, as Jono said during the segment, he thinks he might catch a little flack because people will take the soundbite of 8 seconds of what he said and try to kind of form his opinion based on that. Keep in mind, it's pretty time-constrained.
Come on now. It's not like people are going to go out there, take what Jono said, and edit it together so it sounds like he's Hitler or anything like that. I mean, right, guys in the community? You're totally not going to edit up Jono to make it sound like he hates gay people? Right, everyone with editing skills?
Really, Lunduke? Do you want to start this war?
I'm just making sure you're well represented here, Jono. Looking out for you.
That's a dangerous war with the person that edits this show.
Right, yeah. Do you want to start this war right now?
No, I don't. I talk a big game, but I'm terrified right now.
And let's keep it that way, all right? So... Yep, so thank you everybody for joining us again. As usual, if you want to come and, you know, Bad Voltage is all about the community. It's all about us getting together and having fun and talking about interesting stuff. You know, even if we, as Jeremy says, we only have, you know, 10 minutes to really get into a topic. And it's sometimes hard. I mean, we've picked some pretty big, you know, topics over the time we've been doing it, you know, gun control and atheism and all this kind of stuff, which you can't really dip into in 10 minutes. But continue the conversation over at community.badvoltage.org, where you can join in the fun. And I guess we'll see you folks on the next show.
Bye bye.